Hello and welcome to Connect Learning. It's May 6, 2005.
Pinnacle Studio 9.
So that they can integrate video editing into their classroom. It's been an interesting last week, I guess. If you've been reading any of my blog, you know that my website has been going through some turmoil.
That's an understatement.
I guess it was just about a week ago that the web server that my sites were running on crashed. And the web hosting company that I use, Blast, went to what I would call heroic efforts to save the site. They moved everything over to their Whopping web server. I guess it's called a shared hosting web server, where they have lots of websites on there. And they moved my website over with every indication that it would work just fine. And it did. They moved it over. They told me to try it out. I pulled it up and, you know, slap, slap, slap. I could hear the ting of those web pages bouncing off of the display of my computer. And that went on for about 5 minutes. Then it got slow, and then it got slow, and then it ground to a halt, and I got a call from Blast saying that it had just crashed 14 other websites because of all the hits that the websites were getting. So it stumbled. It would run pretty well for a few minutes, and it would ground down and crash, and then it would run for a few minutes once they rebooted. So finally, and I was at home for part of this, although I did hit the road for a conference in Chicago at the end of last week. But through all of this, I ended up taking Blogmeister, which had a lot of users, and I guess of all of the sites on my website, Blogmeister is probably the one that is most critical to many teachers' daily lesson plans, because they check out the wireless laptop, or they register their class into the computer lab where they're going to be writing with the blog. And if Blogmeister is not coming up, then they've wasted that opportunity. So I judged that Blogmeister would be the one that's most crucial to get up. So I contracted with another web hosting company and moved Blogmeister over, and it's been running very well ever since. We hoped that that would take enough pressure off of Landmarks for Schools, which of course it didn't. And I started crippling other services. I shut down Rubric Builder, I shut down PyNet, I shut down Citation Machine, I shut all these things down, and it still didn't bring the site back up again. It was just being hit too hard by people trying to access, particularly Citation Machine, but some of the other services as well. The hosting company would send me back logs, which I would go through line by line. I finally figured out how to move it into my spreadsheet so I could sort things out and figure out what people were hitting. And of course, it was Citation Machine more than anything else, but it was other services as well. So we finally started shopping for a new home for Citation Machine. The service that I found that had the largest bandwidth in terms of the amount of traffic, the amount of data that could be sifted through the internet or through the site, was a company that would offer, I don't remember exactly, but it was over 100 gigabytes. Anything more than that, I would have to have contracted for web server, and that moves the price way up. So I contracted with them, moved Citation Machine over, and what's really odd is I had to get this service with 190-some gigabytes of throughput, and at the same time I'm paying for 200 megabytes.
You meant to say 2,000 megabytes.
All of that to run a web page that takes up about 78 kilobytes, images and all. So I got 78 kilobytes worth of code resting on 2,000 megabytes of disk space, so that I can use 190 some gigabytes of throughput. And I just realized I'm probably boring quite a few of you people. It's just living in these numbers. I've been living in geekdom trying to get this web server up and running. Well, we got Citation Machine up and did some calculations and figured that we could handle 70,000 citations in a day. So we started counting. I wrote a little program that would count the hits, and after about 5.5 hours, we'd exceeded the 70,000. Had to shut it down. So today, I put in some programming code that would cut it on at 8 o'clock in the morning Eastern Standard Time, and keep it on until about 3 o'clock, the end of the school day, and count out up to 50,000 citations. Well, by about 12:30 this afternoon, it had already gotten to 50,000 and it shut itself down. Came back on again at 3 o'clock, and it's going to count off another 20,000, and then it'll shut down again. I think tomorrow I'm going to try running it by the hour, calculate how many citations. I think I calculated it to about 2,900 citations each hour in order to keep it under the 70,000. So I'm going to try 2,900 citations per hour and see if that makes it run a little more smoothly, or it might be easier if you run out of citations, it might be easier to wait till the next hour than to wait until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So we'll try that. The hope is, I'm rewriting Citation Machine now so that it's greatly simplified, and so that I can make it available for licensing and downloading onto school and media center websites, so that people have the option of running Citation Machine locally, and students will have access to it anytime, any day of the week. And hopefully that will decrease the traffic on my server to the point where my Citation Machine will become more reliable. So distributing the service seems to be the logical way to go. In case you couldn't tell, I'm driving down the road here. I think I introduced myself that way, driving through the coastal plain in North Carolina. All the podcasters that I've listened to have done this before. I'm out on the open road, straight line. I feel pretty confident, except for this tiny old car just pulled over in front of me. But that's okay. Just moving right along. Let's see, what's up for today? Communication. I've been doing this series on literacy, and we've looked at what it means to be a reader in the 21st century. We've looked at what it means to do math, arithmetic in the 21st century. And today it's going to be writing or communication. And again, in review, I think what's important as we consider what it means to be literate in our students' future, I think what's important is to examine exactly how the nature of information has changed. We learn reading and arithmetic and writing because basically we did all of our communication on a technology called paper, using books and pencils and pens. You know, that was the technology that defined information, and literacy is about using information. So our definition of literacy was confined to what you could do with paper and pencil. But information has changed. It has changed dramatically in just the last 30 years, and even more dramatically in the last 10 years. There are three things, I think, if you factored everything down to the very basics of how information has changed, I think there are three things that we could talk about. First of all, the fact that information is now networked, largely networked. Just about all of the information that we encounter was at one time on a network, and much of it you get directly off of the network. And because information is now networked and can't be housed between the bindings of a book, it can't be housed inside of a library, it can't be housed into anything local so that local authorities will say can control it. the information is out of control, or it's in control in a very social way, but it's out of control in a traditional sense. And what that means is that the information that you encounter, the information that you seek out and find, is always going to be questionable in terms of its authority, its appropriateness, its relevance to what you're trying to do. It's always going to be in question. And of course, that's the key to dealing with the fact that the information is networked, is that we should get in the habit of questioning. I've said it many times, we have to stop assuming the authority of information and teach kids to prove the authority. And that means questioning the authority of the information, questioning the information. And in a way, it's good that information is questionable, because this is what kids need to be doing, is asking questions. We spend way too much time teaching kids how to answer questions. We need to be spending a lot more time teaching them how to ask questions. So that's one way that the nature of information has changed, is that it's networked. Another way that the nature of information has changed is the fact that it's digital. The fact that the information is not scratches or stamps on a piece of paper, it's a stream of ones and zeros, bits and bytes and kilobytes. And because information flows as digital bits, it is highly fluid. It can be changed, it can flow, it can glow, it can dance, it can sing, it can do you know, just about anything. And for that reason, there are things that we can do with information that we could not do in the print-based world. Information becomes, in a very real way, a raw material. Information becomes a raw material that we can build with. And I think the argument can be made that in the 21st century, information will be the raw material that we work with. It will be the raw material that we build with. Now, there'll still be factories, and there'll still be farms, and there'll still be these other endeavors. But the fact is that fewer and fewer people will be involved in these endeavors. More and more people will be building with information. And this is where the arithmetic of the 21st century comes in. We were taught to add, subtract, and count, and measure, and calculate, because numbers were essentially the only type of information that you could process in any meaningful way. Text we read, images we looked at, video we watched, audio we listened to, but numbers were something that you could process. Because everything today is made out of numbers, everything can be processed. So for the same reason that we were taught to add, subtract, and calculate, we need to be teaching our kids also to process images, to process sound, to process video, to be able to manipulate information, assembling it into new, unique, and valuable information products. So that's mathematics in the 21st century. It's not just processing numbers, but it's processing any and all information in order to add value to it. So, what about communication? There's a third characteristic or aspect of information that has changed dramatically, and that is essentially the fact that information is now so important to us. The decisions we make on a daily basis are based on a myriad, a vast myriad of information that we have access to. I think to understand how information is, I want to talk about a picture that I frequently show in my presentations. It's a picture of my son sitting in his cockpit. I call it his cockpit. It's actually a sofa in the TV room. And he sits in it, and kind of like he's in a spaceship cockpit. And at any moment, I might walk in there, and he's got his white earplugs in his ears. He's listening to his iPod, classical music probably. He's got his game controller in his hand, so he's playing a game on the TV. He's got a headset on with the microphone, because the types of games that he's playing, they're massively multi-user, I can't remember what the acronym is, but it's these games where you have a team of people who are working together to accomplish a goal. So he's talking to these people who are out there on the internet someplace. He's also, for the members of his team who do not have broadband, he's got a little keyboard on his belly, the little black keyboard that came with the game system. So he's chatting with them via the keyboard. And he's probably got his laptop sitting on his lap, instant message running in it, several windows of instant message, where he's carrying on conversations with people that he knows at school and otherwise. So, you know, here's this kid, and he's practically buried in you know, these machines. He's got wires draped all over him. He's got to very carefully get up on those rare occasions that he does get up. He's got to be very careful about it. But the point that I make is that when we, people of my generation, say 30 years or more, when we look at this picture, we see technology. You know, we see this young man engaged by technology, plugged in to the technology. That's what we think of, because we came out of a century that was defined by its machines. So we see machines, we see technology. Now, if I could get my 16-year-old son to truly reflect on what he is doing and his experience, I suspect that he would say that it's not the technology that he's thinking about. It's not the technology that's giving meaning to his experience. It's information. It's the information that he's seeing on the screen. It's the information that he's tapping into the game control. It's the information that he's speaking into his microphone to other people and listening to. It's the information that is engaging him. It's the information that is giving his experience meaning, not the machines, not the technology. The information is what is important. Last week, I'm not sure if I said this on a podcast yet. I think I wrote about it in a blog, but last week I spoke at a conference in Eastern North Carolina and stayed in a hotel, local hotel there. I paid for it myself out of pocket, so it was a very cheap hotel, very, very cheap hotel. It was one of those hotels that has a number in the name, we'll put it that way. I knew it was a cheap hotel. Walked into the hall, and there was this faint aroma of stale beer, body odor, and mildew. That's what it smelled like, and that's okay. It's where I was. Walked into the room. It's just, you know, basically a square box. No pictures on the wall. Furniture was a little beat up, but it wasn't bad. Cover on the heating air conditioning unit was half askew. It's okay. It's the kind of hotel that it was. But what surprised me was that this hotel had free wireless internet. Put my laptop up on the desk, plugged it in, opened it up. You know, I was online, just lickety-split. So, you know, this cheap hotel, it's got free wireless internet. Now, the next day, there's a police car coming up behind me. Better slow this car down. There he goes. I forgot where I was. Oh, yeah. The next day, I got thinking about this hotel that I'd stayed in, and I realized that this hotel was not competing for business customers. Business customers are not going to stay there, business clients. They were competing for itinerant construction workers. Now, these are the people who are going to stay in this hotel for the next week, where they're working a project on the university or the local town. You know, it's competing for itinerant construction workers who travel around in with their $600 laptops. Yeah, it's the information. Again, it's digital networked information that is giving our experience meaning. Now, when information has become so important, when there is so much information out there, we have to spend time and effort selecting the information that we're going to use. Basically, information has to compete for our attention. We shop, online today. We decide how we're going to spend our money based on comparing information. Whereas 30 years ago, you made your decisions on how you were going to spend your money by comparing products on a store shelf. What this means is that information in the 21st century competes for attention in exactly the same way that products on a store shelf competed for attention in the industrial age. For the same reason that we made a science out of packaging products to be displayed on a store shelf, we must learn and teach our students how to package information. Information competes for attention. What this means is that kids must learn how to write, and not just the mechanics of writing a coherent paragraph. They must learn how to write coherently. No, they must learn how to write compellingly. You know, we write in order to accomplish a goal. So we have to teach kids how to write compellingly so that it competes for attention. I'll tell you something else we've got to teach kids about writing. There was a story in the News and Observer, our capital paper, this morning about somebody who had done a study on the writing part of the SAT test. The one SAT test has been given now that had the new writing components. And they did a study on the scores, and what they found was a very strong correlation between the length of the students' writings and the scores that they got, indicating that the more the students wrote, the higher their scores were. Now, of course, there's a lot of factors that can be included in, but that was what the story was about, was this indication that the more you write, the better you do. Well, the fact of the matter is that in the 21st century, it's not the more that you write, it's the less that you write. If your information is going to compete for attention, then when somebody pulls up your web page or opens to your page in the catalog or whatever, the information that looks easiest and simplest and least impactful on your time to use is the information that people are going to use. The information that looks easiest to understand, that looks like it's going to be the fastest to read, that's the information that people are going to use. So we need to teach kids how to write compellingly with as few words as possible, not with as many words as possible. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, novels and poetry and essays, you know, well-thought-out essays are going to go away. But the kind of writing that most people do, technical writing, emails, personal communications and business communications, we've got to teach kids how to say more with fewer words, not how to say more with more words. But if our kids are going to succeed in competing for the attention of their audiences, they must also know how to communicate with images. They must also know how to communicate with sound. They must know how to communicate with animation, with video. If information must compete for attention, then students need to be skilled in this full range of communication, not just text on a page or text on a computer display, but images, animation, sound, video. So at the same time that we're teaching how to write, we need to teach them how to communicate in these other realms, because it's all about communication. When I'm doing this as a workshop, and especially when I'm doing this as a keynote address, I show some videos. The students have produced some very, very compelling videos that illustrate the difference between students communicating compellingly using this full range of information and simply fulfilling an assignment, writing coherently and fulfilling an assignment. There's a vast difference between those ideas. I think I am beginning to understand the vast difference as I'm getting emails from teachers who are using Blockbuster and who are writing and talking about how, you know, they're seeing the quality of their students' writing improve in weeks. And they can't believe that their students are begging them to write. And the students come in the classroom, can we write, can we write, can we write? Because, and I think my theory of why kids are enjoying writing blogs is that they don't see it as writing. They don't see it as writing instruction, as writing as a course. What they're doing is communicating. You know, they're writing something knowing that an audience, it may be the other students in the classroom, it may be other students in another class, it may be the world, is going to be reading what they're writing. So they're communicating. And that's different from a writing assignment. A writing assignment is technology. Writing is technology. And when we teach kids writing skills, we're teaching the technology of the written language, the technology, the technique of communicating with words. And it feels like technology to them. But if they're blogging, or if they're producing a video, or if they're producing a podcast, knowing that there's going to be an identifiable audience for their information product, then they are communicating. And that's a whole different thing for these students. They're at home communicating. They understand communicating. You know, they've done it all their lives, and they're doing it in ways that my generation, you know, couldn't even have imagined when we were that age. They understand communicating. And if we can tap in to that sense of communications with our students while we are integrating technology, while we are teaching information skills, then I think we can get farther. We can get farther in preparing them for the 21st century. Bottom line with all of this is that if we could effectively redefine literacy so that it reflects this changing nature of information, the fact that information is networked, the fact that it's digital, the fact that it drives our culture and our society, if we could redefine literacy so that it reflects this changing nature of information, then we could stop integrating technology and start integrating information skills, start integrating literacy. Instead of integrating technology, we integrate literacy. If we've effectively and appropriately redefined literacy, then the technology is going to come along. It's going to come along for its own reason. It's going to come along because it's essential for being literate in the 21st century. Well, you know, I just burned up 27 minutes. I haven't done a 27-minute podcast in weeks and weeks and weeks. And I did that just driving along and stammering away. I've gotten in the habit of writing my script out with the word processor, with the text processor, and then listening to it being read back to me by the computer, polishing it up, and then reading it with as much feeling as I can. I don't know if this is coming across with more feeling than that. But... now, I feel like I make more sense when I'm writing, and I guess when I turn back around and listen to this, I'll judge as to how much sense I've made. But I've been here across the coastal plains of North Carolina. Literacy. We're going to spend a little bit of time on the ethics of this new information environment. Till then, I bid you all adieu. Okay, I'm here at the Tech Forum, and I just spied across the way. There are hundreds and thousands of people here, and I just spied across the way, and I looked across here, and just guess who I saw? Steve Denbo. Steve Denbo, this is wonderful. How are you doing?
Just fine, Dave. I feel very nervous being in front of a microphone. Can I tell you?
Well, you don't look at all like I thought you
would.
Hey, how are you?
And there goes Dave Jakes. We'll be talking to Dave a little bit later. Well, I'm going to cut this off because I just thought this would be priceless to have.